evening and welcome to the 458th episode of Travelitch Radio. I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, along with my friend and co-host, Mary Ellen Nugent-Lee. And this is the 11th season of Travelitch Radio, the show that lets you enjoy the pleasures of travel from the comfort of your armchair.
Every week at this time, we talk to people representing destinations, hotels, airlines, railroads, car rental companies, and others in the world of travel and hospitality, from authors and bloggers to broadcasters and publicists. If it's got anything to do with travel, it's got everything to do with Travelitch Radio.
And tonight, we're pleased to welcome to Travelitch Radio, Jeff Stumm, director of The Great Race, not the movie, but a real-life vintage car race that has been going strong now for four decades. Welcome, Jeff, to Travelitch Radio.
Well, thanks, Dan and Mary Ellen. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, well, what is the Great Race, and where and when does the 2022 edition start?
Well, the Great Race is an old car race across the country each year, and every year is a different route. It started in 1983. It was the dream of a man named Tom McRae. And we just keep carrying on this tradition every year. And the route this year is from Warwick, Rhode Island, to Fargo, North Dakota. And it's not necessarily coast to coast, but it is. We do a lot of themed routes. And it is based on the 1965 movie called The Great Race, starring Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon. In fact, much like Mel Brooks would talk about the movie The Producers being a movie about a play about a movie, The Great Race is a race about a movie about a race, because in 1908, the original Great Race was from New York to Paris. So we pay homage to the movie and to the original 1908 Great Race each year.
Well, how many people will enter, and how many cars will be involved?
Well, we normally limit it to 120 vehicles because it's not a speed race. It's actually a time, speed, distance rally. And unlike or like a race, a speed race, there are winners and losers, and there is prize money. But the prize money goes to the team that does it the most accurately, the one who drives the exact speed we tell them to do, to make the turns exactly how we tell them to make them, to stop the stop signs exactly for the same amount of time that we tell them to. And the winning team gets $50,000 out of a $160,000 total purse.
Ooh. So, and do racers have to pay an entry fee in order to participate?
Yes. I mean, there's a entry fee of for private entries. You can enter as a corporate team as well.
And you have a dozen or so sponsors. Who are they, and are ones putting up the prize money?
You know, the entry fees and the sponsor money goes towards the to pay all of the fees or the winnings for the teams. So, you know, there's nothing, no specific sponsor that designated to pay the winning money. But we have some great sponsors. Hemmings Motor News is our title sponsor for over 10 years. Hagerty Classic Car Insurance, Coker Tire, the largest provider of classic tires in the world. So we have some really good sponsors, and we have a new auto transportation company from New Jersey, McAllister's.
Oh, okay. That's great. Well, we really appreciate them. We're talking to Jeff Stumm, director of The Great Race.
Jeff, we understand that all the entered cars must be of pre-World War vintage, World War II vintage, actually. Does that mean they can't use high-speed interstate highways to compete?
Yes, this is all back roads, and I mean rural back roads. And the race started in 1983. It was all pre-war cars, what we call in the hobby pre-war cars, meaning before World War II. We have loosened those up a little bit over the last decade or so to accept any car 1974 and older. About half of the cars are pre-war and half the cars are post-war, but they compete. Every car does the exact same route, 1 minute apart. They draw numbers, and so there's 2 hours of this, you know, train of old cars moving throughout the countryside. And so they're doing the same route, but if you're in the first car and I'm in the last car, you're 2 hours. You're doing everything 2 hours ahead of me. So we have secret checkpoints along the way. So they have to go exactly the way we tell them and try to do is the speeds and make all the maneuvers how we tell them to do. And for every year older your car is from 1974, you get a percentage off of your score. So the incentive is to bring a pre-war car. And out of the this would be the 40th year of the event, only one time has a post-war car won the event.
Wow.
Wow. Well, how and when did the race get started, and how did you get involved in it?
Well, I saw the race for the first time on TV back in 1987 when ESPN was just getting started and they were running Australian rules football and all these kind of wacky things to fill time. And my job, I worked till 1 a.m. and I got off and I don't know, about 2 a.m. this interesting show came on, and it was a great race. And it was from California to New York that particular year, and it was the highlight show, and it was very interesting. And I just got very interested in it, and saw the event for the first time the year after that. And by 1992, I was involved in helping put on a stop. And then by 1994, I competed for the first time. And then in 2010, under a change of ownership, they brought me in to run the event.
Do you have another job, or do you handle great race activities year-round?
No, this is pretty much it. We don't have a very large staff. I use a lot of volunteers during the event for 2 weeks. I have almost 50 people take 2 weeks of vacation to come work for me each summer. So, yeah, this is pretty much everything. We use over 3,000 hotel room nights during the event. You know, it's 2,300 miles. We have to measure the course. We measure it four times because it is a competition. We like to call it the most unique event in all of motorsports because we bring these cars and we bring them to downtown cities. Our niche markets are not the large Chicagos and Philadelphias of the world, but the Medina, Ohio's and Erie, Pennsylvania's and Binghamton, New York's of the world.
Now, when the Great Race was first staged, didn't racers terminate in Indianapolis during the week as the Indianapolis 500? Was that done deliberately?
They did. That just shows you the P.T. Barnum-like attitude of the founder of the event, Tom McRae. He decided he wanted to finish the event in Indianapolis the week of the Indy 500, and he just did it, and he asked, you know, the race was already scheduled, and then he kind of would put things together after the fact. And he not only was Tony Curtis the grand marshal of the very first race in 1983, who he didn't know, but he talked to come into Knott's Berry Farm in California where the event started. He also got all of the cars that made it to Indianapolis got to do a parade lap around the speedway there in Indianapolis. Just a phenomenal thing to pull off.
Oh, you're not kidding. Yeah. That's fantastic.
And through the years, we've been back multiple times to Indianapolis and gotten to do laps around the track. In 2003, we finished at the Daytona International Motor Speedway as the just an hour before the what used to be called the Firecracker 400 on the 4th of July as part of the finish line of the race that year was the finish line at the Daytona Speedway.
Oh, that's fantastic. We're talking to Jeff Stumm, director of The Great Race.
Jeff, are the routes of The Great Race always east to west or west to east? Have you ever gone north to south or even across the borders of other countries?
Absolutely, all of the above. We when the race started, it was that first year, as we mentioned, it was the Knott's Berry Farm to Indianapolis in 7 days, and that's quite a haul on these old cars to go that far in 7 days. After that, it actually expanded to 2 weeks and was a coast-to-coast event for more than 20 years, Charleston, South Carolina to Huntington Beach, California, Los Angeles to New York, that kind of thing. We did Tacoma, Washington to Norfolk, Virginia. Just that was very common. After the change of ownership in 2010, we kind of honed in on these themed routes. So they're 9 days. It runs about 2,300 miles, and we call them themed routes. So through the years, we've done through the last dozen years, we've done. We circled the Great Lakes. We did the Mississippi River from St. Paul, Minnesota, down to the Gulf of Mexico. We did Maine to Florida, which was in 2014, one of my personal favorite events. We've done Route 66 Illinois to Santa Monica, California, and actually finished on the Santa Monica Pier over the Pacific Ocean with the cars on the pier. We've done the Lincoln Highway from San Rafael, California to Illinois. We didn't do the complete all the way to Pennsylvania, but we got it finished in Illinois, and we took a side trip to Mount Rushmore through South Dakota. That was just incredible. In 2018, we did Buffalo, New York to Halifax, Nova Scotia, and finished we finished in Halifax on Canada Day, which is July 1. And we were part of their Canada Day celebrations, and we were voted a top 10 event in all of Nova Scotia in 2018.
Oh, wow.
Of any event. And in 2019, we did Riverside, California to Tacoma, Washington. Went up through California, did the where you drive through the redwood trees And I mean literally where they cut it, one of the trees is called the chandelier tree, and it's cut out, and you drive your car through the tree.
Yeah.
It's just an amazing place. We went to, and we were at Crater Lake on, and this was late June of 2019, and we were at Crater Lake. It was 31 degrees and snowing.
Oh.
Yeah. It was fabulous. I mean, just fabulous. And as we left Crater Lake, you know, the snow banks were still 20 feet high. I mean, it was just amazing. We went up through Oregon to Mount Hood and finished in Tacoma, Washington at the it's called America's Car Museum. It's just an amazing place there in Tacoma, right next to the Tacoma Dome.
Who chooses the routes, Jeff?
I do. I'll decide on what the start and finish city are going to be, and we have a kind of a criteria for that distance. We like to travel as many states as we can. We'll be doing 10 states this year. And we then I go through and do the overnights because, again, we have a distance that we don't want to – we try to do about 250 miles a day, which in a 100-year-old car is quite a task. We do competition in the morning, and we give them a break for lunch for an hour, and then we do some competition in the afternoon. So if you're the first car out, we try to have that car leave at 8, get to lunch at noon, leave the lunch at noon, or at 1, and get to the overnight stop at 5. And then we have a promotion at every lunch and every overnight stop. We'll have a promotion. We draw crowds anywhere from, 1,500 to in a small rural setting to, we've had multiple stops last year. We had 5 stops last year that had over 10,000 people in.
Wow.
Now, with the Great Race billed as a family event, are there family teams, like husband and wife teams involved?
Yes, about 30% are husband and wife teams. They do very well. I did it with my wife for a number of years. They do very well. The rest, about half the teams are either father-son, grandfather-grandson, or brothers. That's a very common combination. And then, of course, there's about 25% of the teams are just two buddies. And it ranges from everything from it's been quite a few years ago, more than a decade ago, but we had these two Army buddies that hadn't seen each other since the 50s.
Wow.
And one of them called one of them up one day and says, hey, let's go do this old car race. And they got an old military Jeep,
cool.
And they did it, and it was just a really neat thing.
Oh,
so I guess he never had Thelma and Louise.
last year we had a mother and daughter team that's coming back. It's not a whole lot of all female teams, but there are some occasionally.
Mm-hmm. Good to know. Are there age limits on the drivers? And if not, who are the youngest and who are the oldest participants this year?
No, there's no limits. I mean, you have to be 16, obviously, to be a driver. There's no age limit for a navigator. In 2006, a 13-year-old navigator and his grandfather won the race. So it's very, but the young people do very, very well at this because it is, you do a lot of the, maneuvers with stopwatches, and they're not scared of something. To them, a stopwatch is not high tech. To a 70-year-old retired, banker, a stopwatch, they get freaked out by the stopwatch. So, yeah, young people do very, very well at this. And 4 years ago, we had a two sisters. One had just turned 16, and her younger sister was 14.
Uh-huh.
And they entered the race for the first time. Now, their parents had been involved in the race for many, many years. In fact, even their grandfather had been involved in the race way back. So they kind of grew up around the event. But as soon as they turned 16, the oldest one turned 16, they got in the race. Last year, the race was from San Antonio, Texas to Greenville, South Carolina, and not the way you would think if you're looking at a map. We went up through Texas north to Oklahoma and then over to Missouri and then Kentucky and then the Virginias and then the North Carolina and South Carolina. So When we got to the finish line in Greenville, South Carolina, those sisters, aged 20 and 18, won $50,000 as the overall winners of the race.
Woo!
Wow.
In a 1932 Ford.
Oh, cool. Oh, my God.
And how's that for a great travel experience?
That's fantastic. We're talking to Jeff Stumm, director of The Great Race.
Jeff, would you say camaraderie is the best part of The Great Race? After all, everyone involved is a race car fan, as a participant, spectator, or both.
Yes, absolutely. I tell people that call up for the first time, they say, hey, I want to try this event, or they ask questions about it. Should I do this? And I said, look, there's 500 like-minded people in this event,
mm-hmm.
and they're from all over the world. And we have teams from Japan, Germany, England, France, Australia, Canada, and all of the United States. But they're all like-minded. It's mm-hmm. funny to have the Germans come in with a heavy accent, you know, but everything boils down to the cars.
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese just love automobiles, and they love the Great Race. They've had as many as 18s in the Great Race. They've gotten locked out by COVID the last couple of years, but just love it. And it is. And 70% of the people in the race each year have done it at least one time before. So they come back because of that. The very family atmosphere, you end up spending 2 weeks with these people. And it's,
sure.
You know, I've had people tell me, look, you know, I've got a sister in Tacoma, and I don't see her that much, you know. they love coming and spending time with like-minded people. And it is a competition, but it's not cutthroat. Everybody mm-hmm. helps each other to, you know, if somebody has trouble, they may be ahead of you in the standings, but you go and help them out anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
a competitive
event.
The racers train for the event. Is it the vintage car equivalent of baseball spring training, or do they literally put their lives on hold?
There's not much training other than there are a couple of what we call regional events that are days during the year. You know, like in the fall there might be one, and then spring there's one, and you can go. Especially in the spring, and do an event and spend 2.5 days and kind of practice, if you will, to hone your skills. If you're new at it, it's a great way to learn how to do it. And if you've been doing it a long time and you're really trying to shave some time off your score, which that's the whole idea, the lowest score wins. So you're kind of trying to get the lowest score, because if you get to the checkpoints at the exact time, you get a perfect score. If you're 1 second late, you get a one. If you're 5 seconds early, you get a five. And it's all totaled up. And then at the end of the day, the lowest score wins. So you want to keep practicing to get better and better and better at it all the time.
Like legendary race car drivers Bobby Unser and Richard Petty, do these drivers become celebrities who actually sign autographs?
You know, they do. They do. We have programs that we sell at all the promoted stops, and especially the kids, they'll get the program, and they'll go and ask all the drivers to come up, because they'll identify the car. You know, they'll see a car and say, oh, that's a 57 Chevy, or that's a 1929 Ford Model A, and they'll see it when it comes in, and so they'll go up and flip to the right page, and I'll hand them the pen and have them sign their name. So it's very cool. And you mentioned Bobby Unser. Al Unser was part of the event in 2016 when he hosted the Great Race at his museum in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And, of course, unfortunately, he just passed away very recently.
Yeah.
Jeff, if Mary Ellen or I wanted to enter the Great Race, or at least sponsor a car, how would we do it?
Well, entering is easy. We have a waiting list. So you get on the waiting list, and each spring, in fact, this just happened in the last couple of weeks, we opened it up for a 2-week window for everybody on the waiting list. and we usually get about 40 to 44, 45 what we call rookie teams.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these people have entered, they paid their deposit, you know, the last week for a race that's still more than a year away. But they have spots guaranteed, and then we ended up taking 41 rookie teams for 2023. So all you have to do is pay your entry fee and have a car that's 1974 or over.
Mm-hmm.
As far as if you want a sponsor, you can talk to me.
We're
always looking for good sponsors.
Well, there are a couple of obvious questions I want to stick in here real quick. Number one, do you have cars that break down? And number two, what do you do about weather problems?
Well, one of the most popular things on the race, or that's the weather question is the number one question we get on the race. And most of the people answer it this way. You get wet. If it rains, you get wet. So it is a rain or shine event. We have a number of people that are on our what we call our sweep staff, and they pick up any car that breaks down. So we do not leave any cars behind.
Okay, we're talking with Jeff Stumm, director of the Great Race. Only have a couple of minutes to go.
So, Jeff, are you a participant or a spectator? And were you a fan of automobile racing before you became involved in the Great Race?
Oh, always been a fan of racing since I was little. And I love old cars, and I love travel. And this event puts all that together. So it's... Yeah, it's a great event. But, no, I was a participant at one time, but when I became the director about a dozen years ago, I had to stop participating because I know where all the checkpoints are, and I know what all the true times are, and I'd win every time.
So do all cars have to follow the same route, or can they try shortcuts that might be suggested by Waze?
No, it's all following the same route. We give them the instructions, and it's now you can go another way, but if you do, you're going to miss a checkpoint and you're not going to be on time. So the only way to do it right is to what we call stay on course and stay on time.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Jeff Stumm, director of the Great Race.
And unfortunately, we're out of time. So our guest tonight has been Jeff Stumm, director of the Great Race, a vintage arts in Warwick, Rhode Island, next month. Thank you, Jeff, for being our guest on Travel It Radio, and good luck with the event.
Thank you both. I enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. And if
that's
you don't
it
have
it for this edition of Travel It Radio. Next week, same time, same station, same writers, same announcers. We'll travel to the Sunshine State and learn all about Martin County on the Atlantic coast with Ian Centrone. Now this is Dan Schlossberg, along with my beautiful and talented co-host, Mariella Nugent-Lee, saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night and stay safe.